How are you?
So, yeah, it's excellent to talk to you. And I have to say, doing a best of like this must be like arranging a set list, only probably more difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. You said it. I mean, it was quite a bit of a challenge, to be honest with you, to really choose the songs that should be on my best of album, my first, very, very first best of album. First of all, it was to realize that it was a time for a best of album. It kind of incredible, because I didn't realize that, oh my God, these years really truly have passed by so quickly. Me being happy and, you know, productive and working, really hard working. But it was a time, it's actually a good timing for this best of now. And choosing the songs was difficult, but it was fun. On the other hand, you know, label gave me the chance to choose the songs. Thankfully, you know, I know some artists probably wouldn't even care what's going to be there on their best of, but I do care. I do care. It's a very important album. Actually, I feel that this album is as important as any other album of mine. I mean, seriously. So I chose the songs based on the fact that I thought would be the fan favorite, the ones that have been mostly played in radios, the really rocking ones being released as a singles as well. So that's the core of the best of. But the second album that will be in the media book version, that includes my favorite rock songs of mine, being more progressive, more symphonic, and so. But it was a fun project to do, really.
Yeah, and I think that by virtue of that, you've got a new song that opens the album, effectively shows that, you know, you care about the content.
Yeah, I do. And I worked so hard with, you know, that song that was actually born in 2010 already. I was working on my, for my third album. I was writing songs for my third album, Colors in the Dark. And this song was born at the time. But I was not ready to release it yet. And not after the next one either, the previous. And I was like, it needs its time, because I've been all this time kind of looking for my place in this world. And especially at that time when I was writing this song, I had a home or house in Finland at the time. I had a house in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. I had a summer house in Antigua, in Caribbean. And I'm like, recently had became a mother. And I said, and where should I belong? I felt like a gypsy in the world, because we were touring crazy amount of shows. We were touring like crazy as a family. I was very happy artistically, but personally, I felt like, where are my roots? Where do I belong? You know? And this song is about that. It was like an internal battle about inside of me somehow between these two very important countries in my life. And now, nowadays, well, I do not live in Argentina. I don't live in Finland either. I live in Spain. But hey, I'm happy. I feel I found my place.
And it also references a couple of composers. So I'm curious how musically the instrumentation has got something that sounds like an accordion arranged for harpsichord. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was my life in Argentina, you know, living in Buenos Aires and seeing all the tango artists on the streets playing. I went to see some shows also, and the music was played in the radios, and you hear tango almost every day being in Buenos Aires. I mean, they live with the tango. It's their culture. It's their also their mentality, and it has much to do with Finnish people as well. We have this melancholy inside of us. We also love tango in Finland. Our tango is very different than the Argentinian one, but still there is such a connection, kind of. I have always felt that connection, even though there are countries so far apart, you know. But the musical influences have always been there, you know, with the environment. It comes naturally. It comes naturally. As an artist, I take the influences and they inspire me, and I love doing that. I love kind of also shocking the world in metal or rock, you know. Who the hell puts a bandoneon in a yeah. rock song? Me? Yeah, because I love doing that kind of fusing things and elements into my music, and for me it's fun. I have the freedom to do that, and so why not?
Yeah, definitely. But as you're a soprano, do you find that the melody line is the most important thing of your vocal delivery?
Always. It's very important. And I tend to write very difficult melodies for myself even to sing. I mean, seriously, always, it's like that. Because I kind of, I don't know if it's the pervert in me, that inside me living, that I kind of enjoy the fact that not too many singers can sing my songs, seriously, because they are quite demanding. But then comes the problem when I go and take these songs in a live situation with my live band, and I need to sing the songs. And so one thing is to sing them and record the songs in a studio. Other thing is to sing them live. But as I've always said through all my life as an artist, I've said that I am a person that wants to progress. I'm, as an artist, also an artist that wants to make progress. As a vocalist, I never want to go back with my progress. I always want to make progress. So that's the thing. I face challenges, and I love putting myself against challenges. Always.
Oh, certainly. How do you cope with backing vocals in a live situation?
Well, the reality is that since I have a lot of backing vocals, my guys are actually singing, three of them are singing backing vocals, even though they are mainly done by me on the recordings.
Yeah.
But nowadays, really great lineup, on live lineup, and three of the guys are singing. And of course, I have choirs, and those choirs, they have to be coming out with the stems. It's impossible. Some symphonic orchestra parts also. Many of the things are there being played. I have a cello in my live lineup. I have a keyboard player. Many of those things can be replaced by my musicians, but other things not. But on the other hand, with the best of, in the media book version, there is a live show that it was recorded in Bucharest in 2020, just right pandemia, and I was performing with 16 musicians. So I had strings with me, I had a percussionist, bass player, three bass players, I had a drummer, percussionist, and three guitar players and two keyboard players, backing vocalists. So we all played and did everything live. So there was only a click track. And that was incredible experience for me. It was very spiritual experience, actually, for everybody, because everything was played live. It was one take, and you can see it now in this best of release. And that concert is special. And I wish to do those kind of concerts in future, because there is nothing better than that, you know. Using stems in concerts, I don't like that too much. That's why in every concert of mine, I do acoustic set, whether it's with my musicians. So we play like live, just like that. No click tracks, nothing, you know, just beautiful music. Or I play myself piano parts and sing to my audiences. And so I like that. I like the vibrations that you can only get when you breathe through music together with your musicians. And it's the same like when I am in front of a symphonic orchestra. It's just live, you know.
No, I understand.
And
how would you say your vibrato is different between, say, the rock realm and the opera realm? Because I know that working with an orchestra, they have a different mentality as to, you know, what that sounds like.
Well, I've never been really working as a professional classical singer since ever I started my career, because everything, I've been educated as a lyrical singer, as a lyrical soprano, yes, but I've never, as a profession, I would ever, never, ever compare myself with a professional lyrical singer.
Okay.
But who use my technique of lyrical singing technique in singing rock, I just have the microphone and amplification, you know, that is a huge help. I don't need to put 100% all my focus in how I give my vocal, how I put my vocals out, I mean, how I focus. I can play with it, I can express myself differently, I can just give maybe 50% of all the capacity of my voice. I don't need to strain my voice in rock shows, even though those shows physically are very demanding because I'm jumping around, I'm doing crazy things, you know, on stage. So I need to be fit physically. But the thing is, in a classical shows, when I am with the orchestra, the focus is completely in me, you know. It's the just, it's fulfilling the whole idea of not having amplification and just concentrating in the voice. And vibrato is the same, actually. Vibrato is actually exactly the same. I just control it more in rock.
And do you, in doing that, do you get a sense of projection and working the diaphragm and all the rest of it from the lower register to the upper register being kind of equal across the board? How do you do it?
It's the same. It's the same. It's the absolute control all the time.
Okay.
I can't never, I just cannot ever forget the support. No matter if I sing rock or classical music, it's always there. It's like something that is just carved in me. It's like I cannot get rid of it because it's just while I'm even speaking with you, I'm using my diaphragm to speak with you.
Of course.
It's just so automatic process. It's been there since I was 18. Now I'm 45. I've been training all the time and I keep on training.
When
so it's just there.
No, fair enough. When symphonic metal started out as a genre, did you expect it to be as popular as it became?
I did not have any expectations, nor did the guys in the band I was. I mean, hey, we had no idea what we are going to face. It was a phenomenal, the whole thing that came. We became a phenomenal, and we had a huge success.
Hmm.
But thanks to the bands that have been there already, showing us, opening us the doors from Finland, for example. Some bands already started at the time having international success, and so we got a chance to do and try our wings for the first time internationally, and suddenly it came up and it just took off. We never expected anything like that. My life completely changed. I thought of becoming a, you know, professional opera singer. And, you know, suddenly I fell in love with a different type of music. The whole music scene opened up for me. I got to meet people and I got to work with people. I got very inspired. But I never left the love of mine being classical music, the first love of mine being classical music. I never left it out in my life, from my life. I always kept it there. I kept on progressing and I kept on studying and kept on working. It was very hard, absolutely hard to maintain the two sort of different things in my life, because even though we are talking about music, nowadays they are one thing for me because it's my career. I focus in different things, but it's a one thing. It's only music. But at that time, when I was young, it was difficult because I was in the beginning of my classical singer studies, and then I started to get famous and getting success with the metal band. It's like, huh? But it's both worlds very new to me.
Yeah.
So, and it was a struggle, but hey, one way or another, I managed, till these days, managed to take care of myself and my voice, and, you know.
And also in doing duets with people like, you know, Bjorn from Soilwork, Klaus from Scorpions, Elisa from Arch Enemy, Sharon from, I mean, I could list them all, but the point is, have you taken notes from what they do and understood how they work, or do you just do your own thing?
You know, man, it's so interesting. Every time I jump into collaborations, I love doing collaborations. because you always learn something. We all work differently. All of us, we work differently. I produce my albums. I work alone, mainly alone, you know. I have a great team of people, but I work alone. I am directing people. And then other people, they work differently with different tools. And it's such a great, great to get together and see what kind of magic can happen and what kind of, you know, where it can turn out to be. It's absolutely amazing. And so I have had a chance to collaborate with great guitar players, Aldi Miola, Joe Satriani, Trevor Rabin, name it. I mean, really beautiful, amazing talents. And so they all work differently. And but we understand music, and music connects us, and that's universal language. And so that's, there is just like the emotional power and the passion that gets us together. And it's always been magical for me. I really enjoy it.
That makes sense. I was curious about Falling Awake on the album, on the first, you know, album, this, the best of, that is, in that you've got Jason Hook as opposed to Satch. What was the story there?
Ah, yeah, in Falling Awake song, Jason Hook. Oh, wow. Well, I have three guitar players playing on the same song solo.
Oh, okay.
One of them being... So, Satriani is one of the versions, and then Argentinian guitar player Julian Barrett is on a third version. Because I started working on the song, it was gonna be the first single from my second album, What Lies Beneath. And I wanted my friend Julian from Argentina to kind of wrap it up for as a information or a tool for Joe Satriani to see that, hey, this is something you could do, you know. But be free, and I was giving just, with the help of Julian, him the song, like, okay, this is the song, and there is the solo, and la la la. But I love Julian's solo so much, I kept it. And then when Joe recorded his version for the song, it came as a single, and then my label in UK, actually, came up with the idea. They said, hey, why don't you work with Jason? And I was like, really? I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge fan of the band, and yes, please, if I get his contact, please, let's do it. And so he recorded a third solo for the same song, unbelievable. Nice. So now, yeah, not many people have heard this version from him playing on the song, so now it's available, you know, there in the festival.
Your vocal trills are unique. And I guess it appears on, like, Victim of a Ritual, and there's a couple of other tracks where it's there. Is that something that you had to work on, or it just came naturally?
Oh, no, it's just me bullshitting with my voice and finding out new things that I can do with it. I mean, I love the whole fact that I have gotten this, found out this freedom to express myself with my voice more than ever. I struggled many years, you know, with a lyrically trained voice, how to use this voice within rock and within metal. It struggled for many years, especially when I was singing in live with a band. So I had this, because there was no one that could help me really find my way, or there was no vocal coach that could really coach me how to sing rock. No, I kept on taking lyrical singing lessons. But the thing is that when I got better in lyrical singing, I started to get better in singing rock, because we're talking about the same instrument, being my body and my knowledge and understanding how good I understand what I'm doing. So that was a long journey. But since I discovered that, hey, I can use it, and which way I can use it, and how, it became a such freedom to me. And a song like Victim of Ritual, yeah, it's just fun to play with it, play with the voice, and try out. It's like a try and error, you know, journey sometimes. Especially when it's live, I love doing crazy things.
And on the second album, like as in the second of the best of, you've obviously got, I guess, more rarities and, you know, different aspects, that longer playing songs, I guess. But songs like the dynamics, I guess, like Anteroom of Death, It's all over the place. And how do you edit that?
Actually, on that album, they are all my favorite, personal favorite rock songs of mine. That's why they are like the weirdo, more progressive, symphonic ones. I'm a weirdo because I have gotten rid of my sort of, let's say, everything that I have learned in music. I have gotten rid of that box mind it. Knowledge and education that has been there for such a many years. You know, while I'm sitting in front of my grand piano and start writing songs, of course I use my knowledge, but I am not boxed any longer. I feel free. But it took a lot of time for me to get rid of that. Hey, what's right and what's wrong in songwriting? And The Room of Death is one of a very good example of those songs that, hey, I'm trying to get rid of the rules, how this should be done, A, B, C, B, B, you know.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No, let's just forget about it and let's change the tempo here and let's do the huge vocal arrangements, like Bohemian Rhapsody in the middle part and, you know, get crazy. Why not? Fans, they love this song. I'm sorry. Fans, they love it. Every time I play this song, actually, I'm playing in the recent Raw tour shows this song, and they love it because it's different. And, you know, it's good to be different.
Oh, that's certainly. And a song like Deliverance, it just almost had like a soundtrack feel to it. I don't know if you agree.
Absolutely. Soundtracks are one of my biggest influences. I'm still buying a lot of albums from Hans Zimmer, from Greg Armstrong, you know, name it, these great, great composers. And I'm working with the people from Hans Zimmer Studios. I worked my first album there. Everything was mixed in his studios. I got to meet a lot of people that's been working with him or are working with him. And one of those guys is Jim Dooley. He's doing all the orchestral works for my album. So from every work, every rock album, he's been there. Soundtracks and the movie world in general has been huge inspiration for me. I have this dream, you know, that I would love to try out my wings as a writer, songwriter, still for a score. Mm. You know, I would like to score a motion picture one day because it's a similar work. It's not the same, but it's similar work that I'm doing within my head when I'm writing songs. It would be interesting to see if I would be capable of.
Hmm. Yeah, because I suppose in doing that, it's kind of like when you do film clips, but on a grander scale. The only difference is that you're now pushing your audience to be involved in the actual story as opposed to just sort of promoting a song.
Exactly. It is, in a way, for a score, I would think it could be larger. The scale could be larger, sort of. This is like I need to make a song out of it. In a way, song structure is there always in my mind. Mm. When I write the song, well, it's not that structured, but it is a song. Score, name it, 15 minutes, 30 minutes could be, you know.
Yeah, it's very
long.
It's very open-ended. But just very quickly, of the both albums, like of this best of, are there particular songs that you're most proud of on either release?
Ooh.
And I know there's a lot to take in, so, you know.
Very, very much to take in. I'm just thinking all the songs are now like
true.
Because I cannot name one of my very, very favorite songs of all time.
But like Never Enough or 500 Letters or something like that.
Yeah. What I would say still that the song that gave me life as an artist is I Walk Alone.
Okay.
Even though song was not really written by me. I should name you a song that would have been written by me, but hey, this song was not. I only got to change a few lines of lyrics in this song because it was given to me in the beginning of my career as a solo artist. And when I heard this song for the first time, I was driving a car, and I used to listen a lot of demos that were sent to me, like a bunch of, I don't know, 500 demos in the beginning. Yeah. So seriously, it was. And one of these songs appeared to be I Walk Alone, and I heard it and I fell in love with it. Because I kind of made, you know, I realized that through that song, there is a connection with my fans and all that. I named them as my storm. It gave me the whole idea for the album, this song, for my beginnings. And so that's why, yeah, how many hundreds of times I've been singing that song in every of my concerts. I am never getting tired of it, because it's the whole meaning that what my audience means to me, how those loyal people that been there for me, some of them, many of them for 25 years already, it's unbelievable they're still there.
Indeed.
And so,
oh, it's understandable though. Is there any chance that you might be coming back to Australia at any time in the near future?
It's great that you asked, because we are working on it. We are working on it. I'm just like, oh, I'm praying seriously to be able to make this happen. As a solo artist, it is very difficult.
Yep.
You know, cost-wise, I have to be honest with you, cost-wise, it's very difficult to go that far, change of continent. But hey, we're working on it. We're working on it on a daily basis. So there will be a lot of touring to do, still within in the Raw album, actually. All the shows that have been postponed since COVID and all that, we're still doing those shows, and lots of shows with the Best of album will be there. And naturally, I'm working on my new rock album currently, so writing songs, not in production yet, but writing songs for it. So chances are, you know, Australia would love to.
Yeah, it's staggering to think that it's almost 20 years since I saw you guys, I saw you playing with fronting Nightwish. And I think your costumes actually got lost in Perth or something.
I remember, God, yeah. Oh, yes, I needed to go and buy some clothes, seriously. All my luggage was gone, and yeah, you never see me perform. I really like with the, you know, with the, me, Tarja, performing. Well, yeah, I remember, but it was fantastic. I remember those times. We were all super excited to go to Australia, our first visit, and it was very nice. Lovely memories, though.
All right, look, thank you very much for having a chat to me. I will let you go.
Thank you so much. Take care of you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Ciao. Thank you.